Welcome to the podcast, Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite. I'm Dr. Laura Sokola, your host, and our focus is on mastering communication as an essential leadership skill so that you can command the room, connect with the audience, and close the deal in any context. My guest this week is Ian Wendt. Ian is the Chief Commercial Officer at Jaguar Health. He's been in the biopharma industry and a commercial leader for 30 years, and he's currently also the co-host of the Real Pharma podcast for biopharma professionals. Ian, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Laura. Happy to be here.
And what's your fun fact?
I'm lucky enough to work from home occasionally, I think like a lot of your listeners probably. But you know, one of the challenges there can be that if you're working from home, then you're always at work, right? Mm-hmm. So I try to carve out a little bit of time, even if it's 10 or 15 minutes a day, to go spend some time with my four-legged friends. And I'm lucky enough to have a lot of them. So we have dogs and horses and goats and donkeys. And,
oh my goodness.
And so my fun fact is, usually if I have an apple in the morning, for example, I'll take my apple core down and I'll go down and feed my favorite donkey who loves to see me, comes running up. It's very rewarding. And it's good donkey therapy. So if anybody has the opportunity to have some donkey therapy during their busy day, I highly recommend it. It certainly works for me.
I have never heard of donkey therapy before, but that does sound like something that could be fun to check out.
Well, I may have just made that up, but yeah.
You know, you got permission on my end, so why not? I think that's terrific. Now, I have
Thank you.
How many four-legged friends? You mentioned a lot of them.
Yeah, I lose track sometimes. Wow. But
all right.
We have a couple of donkeys, a few goats, probably, I don't know how many horses we have here now, four or five horses, five dogs, perhaps.
Wow.
A gaggle of chickens, is that right?
A flock of chickens? Sure, why not? I think it's a gaggle of geese,
like
but
that.
I don't know what chickens are. But.
Yeah, so that covers most of it.
Impressive. So in case anybody's wondering out there, he doesn't live in Manhattan.
That's safe to say, yeah.
Safe to say. Okay, so terrific. Then we got a little bit more information about you, Ian, but tell us about Jaguar Health. What's your 30-second elevator pitch?
So Jaguar Health is a commercial stage biopharmaceutical company based in San Francisco. And is unique in a lot of different ways, but I think one of the most interesting aspects of the company is we developed drugs and medicines for both humans and animals, but the way they're sourced and derived is a bit unique. So our lead compound is actually sourced from a botanical plant extract in the Amazon rainforest.
Oh.
So not many drugs are sourced that way. Usually they're made in a big factory from chemical processes. Ours at least start out in a tree that grows in the Amazon rainforest, and we have a variety of different uses for those medications, mostly related to gastrointestinal conditions, and have a vibrant R&D and clinical development program to expand indications to a whole variety and host of conditions that affect people around the world.
Wow. So that Amazon connection, is that where the name Jaguar came from?
Yeah, it does actually. And one of our subsidiaries called Napo Pharmaceuticals, which actually is the marketer of our drug, the name Napo comes from one of the major tributaries that feeds into the Amazon rainforest. And the Napo River is where a lot of these trees grow that we harvest to make this medicine. So yeah, jaguars seem like a good fit in there as well. There's a few jaguars in the jungle.
I would imagine. So it was not just about the car that you drive. Got it.
Yeah.
Then tell me, what is the most important leadership communication lesson that you had to learn, and how did you learn it?
Yeah, I mean, of course, there's a variety of them that maybe you accumulate throughout your career. But at one of my previous employers, they did a really good job of kind of developing their employees, and you could sign up for all sorts of interesting classes. And I remember kind of, this goes back a few years, but signing up for one that was titled something like Executive Communication. And it was really valuable for me because it helped shape or at least change the way I thought about those types of interactions. Mm. And here's what I mean by that. So, you know, when you think about your own work product, if you're an individual contributor or maybe a first line or second line leader within an organization, you know, we tend to spend a lot of time creating content. So maybe a slide deck that you make or some market research that you're involved with or a forecast you create. Of course, these are extremely important and you put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears in terms of creating them. And that's the kind of demonstration of your value. And you communicate those throughout the organization to support various business functions. But an executive leader really doesn't operate the same way. So their work product really is the important decisions that they make every day. And so the only way for them to increase their productivity, that really there's two main ways they can do it. They can make more decisions in a given period of time, so make faster decisions, or they can make better decisions. Hopefully they're doing both. Like the ideal situation is they're making decisions quickly and they're the right decisions. So they're not creating decks, they're not creating forecasts. They're relying on other people in the organization to inform their decisions so they can make that very fast, very informed decision that ends up being right at the end of the day, hopefully. And maybe that sounds obvious to folks listening in, but I think it's a little bit of a change in perspective when you're having those interactions with your executive team to make sure that you're there to give them the information that's essential for them to make a good decision. So it's not about how much work that you put into it. It's not about how much this cost or maybe even how much this means to the organization. Think about the executive summary. It's called an executive summary for a reason, right? It's what the executive needs to make their decision. So, and I think too often when you're first have the opportunity to get in front of the executive team to present, you're worried about, for example, are my slides formatted well? And am I telling a compelling story? And was my executive presence kind of there? And am I networking? And those are all important. I'm not discounting any of those things. But at the end of the day, the executive sitting across the table from you is thinking about how quickly can I make this decision? Because I have 10 more to make later on today that I need to get right. And as soon as you get that mindset, then you can start speaking their language. And I think you're going to get a lot more productive interactions in those settings, which, you know, there's a lot of pressure in the 15 minutes maybe that you have in front of those individuals.
Yes. And especially given the fact that more often than not, what I keep hearing is that people have those 15 minutes on the calendar and then they get in the room. And what actually happens is that somebody else runs over, somebody's coming late, somebody's this and that. And that 15 turns into five or less for that matter.
Or it can go the other direction too. I mean, I think you're right. Probably more times than not, you know, maybe you get less time to tell your story that you've convinced yourself is a 15-minute tight story. And all of a sudden you need to make it a 5-minute tight story. Mm-hmm. But it can go the other way too. All of a sudden somebody wants to go deep asking those questions. That's why it's good to have a robust backup slides or backup content. And that's just situational awareness. That's just being prepared for whichever direction the conversation may go. And you learn those lessons one way or the other because you have these interactions. But yeah, you need to be flexible, certainly.
It's so important to think in those terms. And I'm frequently working with clients who are trying to, what's referenced typically as managing up, right? You have to figure out how to present information to your boss or your boss's boss. And what does that presentation look like? And so frequently, there's that need for the mindset shift because the original inclination is, okay, there's a lot of pressure. I have to do it right. It better be good. A lot of eyes are going to be on me. I'm going to be judged. So I want them to know how much work I put into this. Yep. I want them to see where I got my analysis from and my recommendations so that they don't ask or wonder these kinds of, I'm going to give them as much information front loaded as possible because then I control the narrative. And then hopefully if I fire hose them with data, then they won't ask questions because there's nothing left to ask. Yep. And it's so about what's in it for me. How do I protect myself? How do I, that little CYA acronym, cover your assets, so to speak.
Yep.
And that's really not what it's about. We have to go into that like every other engagement with the what's in it for them. What do they need in order to do their job? And if they need to hear it in this much time, yes, be ready. Absolutely. Have those appendices ready with all the data. Just don't front load it.
Yeah.
You don't need to go through every slide first. If they ask for more, be ready with it. But otherwise, just give them the table of contents, the executive summary. Amazing summary there.
Yeah, I think you're right. And certainly, you know, all those other things that you brought up certainly can be important. I mean, you want to show up right. But the thing I always ask myself is one day or 1 week or 1 month later, what are they going to remember? And ultimately, what it boils down to, mostly what they're going to remember is, did they give me the information I needed to make a good decision? And did it end up being a good decision?
Right.
And if you set a track record of delivering that, you will stand out, no doubt. Everything else is polished, which is nice, which is great to have. But at the end of the day, that's not going to overcome bad information that led to a bad decision.
Right. Of course, heart of the matter, we just don't need to front load all that other stuff. So thank you for helping people start to shift in their own minds and sift out what does and doesn't belong in that executive summary that you need to put forward. Now, Ian, you've obviously learned a lot about communication through more of those formal methods or courses, which is terrific. I think a lot of people overlook the really the importance of having that direct training, direct coaching opportunity. Why not? Just cut right to the heart of the matter and get the direction when you need it or even beforehand. You've also taken a communication style assessment called Insights. What insights did you gain about yourself and your communication style? And how does that influence your communication with others on your team?
Yeah. And I think those are so important to do. And I the one that I'm going to speak to, I did just a little over a year ago. So, you know, I think we should always commit to being lifelong learners in this area. You know, you're never done developing your communication skills. Mm-hmm. And you learn a little bit new each time you do this. So, you know, there's a variety of other tools out there. You know, I think you've spoken to some of them, DISC and MBTI and StrengthFinders, et cetera. This one is similar, and Insights was very insightful, I'll have to say. So, you know, like a lot of them, you have this wheel and there's some colors and it tells you kind of your default communication style. So I ended up being predominantly blue. So what blue means is you really are concerned with the where, what, when, show me the data, show me the objective findings. That's the way I like to consume information. Mm-hmm. And then right below that was red, which is more directive. And, you know, the words they use here is kind of be right, be brief, and be gone. Mm. So that's my default communication style. And I think it's good to understand maybe what naturally comes to us. But I think the challenge then becomes, how do you flex out of your style situationally? You know, mm-hmm. it's one thing to say, well, this is my style, everybody deal with it. Well, that's not yes. necessarily productive and not going to work always. So, you know, the homework, I think, coming out of these things is to say, okay, I now understand where kind of my natural steady state is, mm-hmm. but how much can I flex situationally based on, you know, the relationship I've developed with the person across the table from me to better understand them, to have more productive and insightful communications or interactions with them? How do I flex to meet them in the middle or flex more towards their style so it can be more productive, because their style might be diametrically opposed to mine and we're just not speaking the same language.
What's been the hardest shift to make along those lines when you realize how long does it take you to realize what kind of style you're up against, so to speak, and then to figure out how to shift it in a way that they're going to be able to receive your message more effectively?
I think that's the challenge. You know, we're all busy. We have compressed timelines to get all the things done we need to get done. We're sometimes in stressful situations. And I think in those environments, it can be really easy to forget how important it is to build those relationships, to be an active listener, to understand that person, so you can ultimately have a better interaction with them. Sometimes, you know, we'll tell ourselves a story like, I don't have time for that.
Right.
This is too important. We're just going to do it my way, and you just push through. And look, there might be situations, you're in a crisis situation, maybe that is the right approach, but mostly it's not the right approach, right?
Right.
You need to invest and put effort into it. And like anything else in life that's important or valuable, you need to invest in it, right? It takes effort and time.
Yes.
And you develop those skills and those habits to make sure that's part of your everyday interactions. And it doesn't serve you to do that in a moment of crisis. It's too late, right?
Sure.
You need to lay that groundwork, hopefully, weeks, months, years, if you're working with somebody, so that you understand when they come in that room and you're having this very important discussion, you automatically or already know enough about that person to flex towards their style so that you'll have a good interaction.
You mentioned a lot of people's natural reflexes. Oh, I don't have time to figure out these kind of things and to beat around the bush and be nice to you, give all this data or figure out all these things. But there is a great adage, and I don't remember the source where I heard it from, but that if you don't have time to do it right, when will you have time to do it over?
Yeah, I think that's a great way to think about it. We all tell ourselves stories that justify why we want to do things our own way.
Yes.
Life seems easier that way, but it's not necessarily the best approach, to your point.
It seems like it's easier until it's not. Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned investments. What's the best investment that you ever made in your own leadership development?
I had the opportunity, again, with a previous organization, to have an executive coach wherever you work. If that opportunity arises, certainly take advantage of it. You know, this was 10 years ago or so, I suppose. It's interesting. You develop this relationship with the coach that's a bit like kind of a marriage, let's say, right? You know, you have to decide what the rules of the relationship are and who's going to do what and what you want to hear and what you don't want to hear, I suppose. So the executive coach sat down with me initially and said, look, you know, we can do this a few different ways. You need to tell me what you want. You know, at one end of the spectrum, I can just be a good listener and you can come to me with your questions and your concerns and I'll just do my best to answer them and we'll just have a check-in every once in a while, which might be of some benefit. Or at the other end of the spectrum, we can really dig in and have those very difficult conversations around things that maybe you don't necessarily want to talk about, but that might be areas where you need to develop or frankly improve or your blind spots. You know, do you want to take those on in a very, very direct way? Where do you want to fall on this spectrum, Ian? And so I thought about that a little bit and I said, well, look, you know, your time is valuable. My time is valuable. I want to get as much out of this as possible. Let's go all the way to the far end of the spectrum, like make this hurt, right?
Right. On a scale of 1 to 10, I want the 11.
Yeah, that was the instruction that I gave him. there were times where I regretted that decision, to be honest with you.
No doubt. That's usually when he chose to go to the 11. Never feels good in the moment.
I'll tell you why I regretted it at times, right? And now, in retrospect, I don't regret it at all, to be clear to everybody. But here's what he did. So I had to identify about a dozen people that I work with within the organization. Some of them were peers, some of them were people that were above me in the organization, others that reported to me. And a lot of times you'll see executive coaches that do a 360 survey. It's, you know, kind of an online thing. He didn't do that. He sat down and had one-on-one interviews with a dozen people, probably spent an hour with each of them. So wow. I had 12 hours of content. And I wasn't allowed to pad that list either, right? So I couldn't just put all my friends and my fans sure. on that list. That wouldn't be very productive. My boss had to approve it. And he really pushed me to add people on there that maybe I don't get along with, maybe I don't agree with, maybe people that I suspect don't like me very much. Mm. And so there was a whole spectrum of folks on there, right? So we did all his interviews and we came back and had our first debrief session, and he had kind of a stack of papers in front of him, and he talked about the process a little bit. And he said, we're going to start with the positive things that people said about you. And he had one sheet of paper, mm-hmm. and he kind of read through, and it was anonymous, but you could, you know, kind of tease out maybe who said sure. what about me. And of course, I'm agreeing with everything he's saying at this point, right? You know, Bob said this great thing about you, and Susie said this great thing. And I'm thinking, well, Bob and Susie, they're really on it. They really know me well. And of course, I'm not disagreeing with anything I'm hearing. It sounds great.
Oh, it's all the praise. What's there to disagree with?
All the praise. Right. And boy, these are sure smart people. They see all the wonderful things about you.
They
right?
appreciate me and my intention, my effort.
Yeah. They see me. And so he gets through that list very dramatically, I'll mention. He kind of balls up the piece of paper and throws it in the garbage and says, Ian, that's the last time we're going to talk about anything on that piece of paper. So enjoy that while it lasted. Now we're going to talk about all the other things people said about you. And it's worth noting that there were about 5 sheets of paper on this stack.
Ouch.
And he went through them. And that's his job, right? He's there to uncover. He's not there to uncover all the mm-hmm. nice things people say about me. It's the things that I could do better. So he went through in painstaking detail every one of these things, probably 5 sheets of paper. Of course, I'm sinking lower and lower in my seat as this conversation wears on. But it's what I asked for, and it's what I needed. And it was so valuable. Now, I admit I went home and had a glass of wine and maybe a little cry.
Yeah.
But then you get to work. And really challenged me to address those things that maybe I was thinking I was going to get to another day or just didn't see in myself at all. Like some of them were head scratchers. Like, wow, I had no idea somebody thought that. But better to know that than just yes. be blind to that issue. So it was a difficult, uncomfortable process, but so valuable. And I'd recommend it to anybody if you have the opportunity to do something like that.
Absolutely. Look, I'm certainly going to be an advocate for executive coaching. Anybody, feel free to give me a holler. But it's such an important point that you made as far as you chose the 10. They gave you a, you know, 1 to 10 mm-hmm. or whatever it is, you know, how much do you want to be challenged on yeah. this? And you said, pedal to the metal. Mm-hmm. Let's go. Mm-hmm. And what that says to me as a coach is that, and this is going to sound kind of obvious, and yet it's not for so many people, that you are coachable, that you want that. And now I'm sure you pushed back at from time to time. They said, there's this and that, but you want your natural reflexes to go, well, but I'm trying. And that's because, and there's all the justification, rationalization, yep. you know, but you need to understand my intention. You need to understand my intention, all that kind of great stuff in it. It's so important. I would really suggest to anybody out there, unless you want to be at a 7 or above, don't bother. Mm-hmm. Go get a therapist yeah, if you just fair. Want to vent to somebody sure. or get a best friend and go to the bar and have the glass of wine and skip everything else. But unless you're going for the very, very minimum, a 7 to go up, and you can, there's all sorts of ways to flavor and color those numbers as well. But otherwise, you're not really getting coached. Yeah. That's a whole difference. Only once, maybe twice, did I ever, and I made the mistake once early on and have learned to assess very, very early in the very first conversation with a prospective coachee to identify if they're coachable. Because otherwise, we're wasting both of our times. And there was one person I recall who, in our introductory conversation, told me about something that he had done in his past. And I said, okay, well, tell me about what you've done more recently. And he got all offended and said, well, you know, I just told you I did this. You know, why didn't you should say, oh, wow, that's amazing. How'd you? I thought, did you just script what my answer to you was supposed to be? I said, you're not looking for a coach. You're looking for a cheerleader. I wish you well. You know, it was slightly more diplomatic than that. But I did say, no, this is not going to be a good fit. But it's really important. What are you looking for?
Yeah. And I think people that maybe haven't had the opportunity to have an executive coach or any coach may not know kind of what the expectations are, what it really is designed to do. They might have some kind of different idea in their head. I think if you walk into it with the expectation that unless I really start feeling uncomfortable, I'm doing it wrong, and that just know that there are going to be those moments of getting outside of your comfort zone and having those difficult conversations, if you prepare yourself for that and hold in your mind that that is actually a positive part of the process so that you don't just spiral down and start getting defensive to your point, then I think you can realize that, okay, this is good. This is part of the positive things that I'm trying to do to develop as a professional.
Absolutely. Two things to that. Number one, any sort of growth should not be comfortable. Growth, by definition, is stepping outside of the comfort zone. So you go to the gym to get in better shape physically. It's not comfortable. It's terrible for most of the process. It's not about enjoying the process. It's about enjoying the results, the fruits of the process, the fruits of the labor. So, you know, get that out of your head right away. That being said, it is, I think, really important to find a coach whose style and personality is a good fit. Someone who understands you, who, if you are someone who needs a little gentler touch when presenting you with those five pages of certain things, as opposed to the sledgehammer over the head approach, that's fine. If you're like, nope, give me the sledgehammer. Don't waste a minute of my time saying nicey-niceys around it. I don't need sugarcoating. I don't need couching. Just hit me with it. Okay, we'll find somebody who knows how to wield that sledgehammer. So find someone who is a good fit for you, but figure out how you can best receive challenge and then grow.
The only thing I'd add to that, I think fit is important. It is a relationship, and then trust, right? Unless you can establish a high degree of trust, you're not going to be vulnerable enough.
Correct.
And open enough to really address what needs to be talked about.
100%. That's a great note to end on for the coaching discussion with all of those challenges involved in it. Let's go to the 24-hour influence challenge. And now, Ian, I invite you to talk to our listeners and challenge them directly to take one step that they can complete within 24 hours to have more influence. How would you like to challenge our listeners today?
You know, if we all think about our work environment and who we spend time with, we tend to spend time with folks that fall into probably two different buckets. And there's a little overlap between these two, right? We spend time with people that we're required to, let's say, because of our job, right? We work for them. They work for us. They're our peers, and we have to work with them to do our jobs. So it's kind of mandated that we spend time with these people. And then the other bucket is people we just like, right? So it's people that we get along with, we have some personal affinity with, and hopefully it's an overlap with the first group a bit, which makes a good work environment. But we tend to spend 90% plus of our time with folks in those two groups. And that leaves out a lot of people in your organization. And you're probably missing opportunities to build your network unless you take an active role in not just exploring folks that fall into those two buckets. So my challenge is write this down and really challenge yourself. Think of three individuals, and it doesn't have to be folks. This is not really managing up. These could be peers. They could be folks that potentially you could mentor. They could be folks that are higher up than you in the organization. But find three individuals that don't squarely fit into those first two buckets. I'm not required to work with them, and I don't already have some relationship with them that I have an affinity for them. And really, that's the only way you're truly going to expand your network. It gets back to what we were talking about earlier. Get out of your comfort zone. You know, talking to people that you like to spend time with is easy. Talking to people that you're required to work with is easy. Who are the more difficult ones that are outside of those definitions? And that is going to open up new doors for you, I believe, that you just may not have even been aware were there. And so if you do that consistently, start with three in the next 24 hours. It's easy to write down three names. Work on those over the next week or two to get on their calendars. And then rinse and repeat. And you should be trying to do this every month.
I think that's great. And for those who are on the other end of the social style spectrum, shall we say, who are going, that sounds like A, approaching strangers, and B, making small talk. How would I even, can you frame for people what might be, I assume people are going to be sending an email of some sort to initiate the exchange. Nobody picks up the phone anymore, most likely. So if you decide, okay, look, I had one or two tech support exchanges with this person or HR conversations with this person. I know they exist. They know who I am, but we really don't interact beyond a support call of some sorts for 10 minutes. Is that the kind of person that maybe I should just get to know better for 20 minutes on a coffee call? And how do I tell them that without having them think I'm hitting on them or doing something weird?
Well, first, what you described there, somebody feeling a little uncomfortable about doing this, and that's your first indicator that you probably should do it, right? So, because your first impulse is to find reasons not to do it, and you got to push through those. Second is, how do you do it? I think is your real question here.
Yes.
And everybody gets a lot of the same advice that we should work, build our network and expand our network. And and everybody is waiting for somebody to call them so they can expand their network. Because that's a lot easier than being proactive.
Sure.
So it's easy for me. If I sit here and a bunch of people reach out, I can select, well, I like this person and this person and this person. It doesn't take much action on my part.
Right.
I don't have to take any initiative. For all the apprehension or reluctance that might exist in terms of reaching out, if you do it the right way, people are happy to help. People are flattered. And look, you know, people love to talk about themselves. You know, if you tie it back to something business related so they can at least connect the dots of why this person is interested, you might say, hey, I saw you present, or I heard you, you know, brought up in a meeting talking on this issue. It's something I'd really like to learn more about. Do you have 15 or 20 minutes? You know, don't ask for an hour. That might be too much.
And people
are
getting
worried. Can I fill an hour with this person? Right. Maybe it's just for a quick coffee. Maybe it's 15 minutes, drop by their office, you know, and you can play around with that. But you know, leave them some room to fit their schedule. But I think if you're seeking help, if you're seeking information from them, people love to talk about what they're interested in or what they're responsible for. You're not going to get many no's.
Yes. And I find that even in networking events, you could be at a conference, the morning breakfast buffet of stale pastries and bad coffee and those kinds of things. Most people will stand around and stare at their phones, not because there's really a lot of stuff they want to check up on, but because they just don't know how to initiate the conversation when they see other people are talking and there's maybe a lot of others who are by themselves, but they're afraid to start. I've had so many people say to me, I'm okay talking to anybody. I just can't start it.
Yeah.
How do I start those conversations? So to open that email and send it out, what would be a first line that you would send, Ian?
I tie it back to some area where they have expertise that I don't, and I want to learn more about it. So, you know, again, I think if you can be specific, that helps. You know, I saw this project team that you were involved with, and I would love to learn more about that work. Or I saw this post that you made on LinkedIn, or, you know, tie it back to something specific that helps them understand why is this person reaching out? Because it's not to say that they won't respond in a positive way, but they want to be prepared and present to you the information that you want. And so I think giving them a little bit of direction there certainly is a little bit flattering that you notice them. People love that as well. And, you know, I think the apprehension we have about the fear of rejection can kind of get in the way of taking that step, you know, and put yourself out there. And even if they don't have time, or even if they're not the kind of person that wants to connect, they're not going to remember a week from now that you even reached out. It doesn't matter. So don't worry about the rejection, but it's not going to come very often.
Yes. And if nothing else, if it is just somebody that you've seen CC'd on emails or whatever,
sure,
reach out to that person. Keep it simple. And it can just be as easy as, I keep seeing you on this list, or we seem to keep whatever. Whereas, I don't know you. Can we have a 10-minute call just so we know who each other is and can reach out as necessary in the future? Keep it super simple. No presentation is necessary, but love the idea of reaching out to know who the people are in your neighborhood, to paraphrase Mr. Rogers. So, all right, great influence challenge. Finish this sentence for me, Ian. I wish I was better at explaining blank to blank.
The thing that comes to mind here, and this might be a little bit of a hot topic, I suppose, but I wish I was better explaining drug pricing to the general public.
Interesting. Why?
We've probably all seen headlines, probably not favorable headlines, about the high cost of medications in the U.S. specifically.
Sure.
And look, there is a lot of room for improvement. I'm not here to defend all of the pricing that we see reflected in many of the drugs that are so important for many patients in need. And no doubt there are patients that face challenges to access to care and access to their medications. And sometimes cost is a barrier to that access. But, you know, I think the way it sometimes can get framed up is that there's the big bad pharmaceutical companies, and they're just charging too much for these medications because they can, and tough it out, patients, and stop complaining and send us your money. Of course, I'm biased. I'll acknowledge that. But I don't think that's necessarily 100% fair way to frame the issue. There are many changes I think that we should consider, and it's a very complex issue. But simply saying that the drug companies charge too much is probably an oversimplification. And so because it's such a complex issue, and because it's a hot button for so many people, I find myself struggling. How do I condense this down in a really easy to understand, compelling way that they understand all the other factors that are involved that we need to fix? Not just drug companies are one piece of it, and then there's a bunch of other pieces to the puzzle, like PBMs and payers and insurance companies, and there's a lot of complexity there. So I think everybody in the industry struggles with explaining something that is so complex, and that's part of the problem. This complexity that we've designed into the system makes for a very unwieldy healthcare delivery system, unfortunately, in the U.S.
Yeah, and even things like people don't, how long on average does it take a drug to go from conception to market?
Yeah, I mean, that can be a very long and expensive journey. It varies quite a bit. But you can think of like a 7 to 15 year time horizon between kind of when something is discovered, maybe, or identified as a drug candidate in the lab before it ends up on your pharmacy shelf for you to fill that prescription. There is a tremendous amount of research and development investment. In fact, on average, and this number is actually a few years old, so it might be a little bit different today, but on average, it takes about $1 billion, that's billion with a B, dollars to bring a single drug to market.
Yeah.
Because what you don't see are all the other failed drugs. You know, for every one drug that comes to market, there's 99 or so that don't.
Right.
And there's maybe tens or hundreds of millions of dollars of investment in these drugs that fail, and they're just ended up in the waste can largely, mm-hmm. and we never hear about them, but somebody still has to pay for that, right? So the company still has to recoup all that R&D to find the one drug that's safe enough and effective enough to bring to market.
Yeah, it's not quite a cookie recipe that you're putting together. So it is
very challenging.
So complicated. I do not envy you having to have that conversation. But others will envy us for having this conversation. And hopefully everybody out there will spread the word and have your friends tune in to listen as well. Ian, how can people learn more about you and Jaguar Health?
The best way to find out about Jaguar Health is to go to jaguar.health, no.com, just jaguar.health. Talk about all the great things that our company is working on that I'm quite passionate about and very proud of. You can find me on LinkedIn, anybody who'd like to reach out directly. And maybe most importantly, we have our own podcast called Real Pharma for pharma professionals, biopharma professionals, called realpharma.co. You can find information there if you'd like to listen in on some of our topics.
Terrific. Thank you so much for joining me today. I've loved this conversation.
Thank you, Laura. Thanks for the time.
And everybody out there, as always, thank you for listening and tuning in. If you have not done so yet, please subscribe so that you never miss an episode. And don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts so we can help even more people to increase their confidence, presence, and influence. And of course, if you want to download my free guide to equipment recommendations for virtual influence, including my picks for microphones, lights, and more, go to speakingtoinfluence.com. I'm Dr. Laura Sokola, and you're listening to Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite.
Thanks for listening to Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite, the show for leaders who want to speak with impact. The hosts, producers, owners, and media distributors of the show make no guarantees that the strategies and information discussed will result in profit or other success and may result in losses. The opinions and statements of the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the owners, staff, managers, broadcasters, or sponsors of the show. No medical or psychological therapy or personal or professional wellness or relationship advice is offered in the show. You are advised to seek counsel on matters related to your health, family, relationships, job, or other business and legal matters from licensed advisors in those areas prior to making any changes in business or lifestyle. No information provided may be suitable in your situation. As always, take responsibility for the decisions and actions you take, including the reactions they may make in your work, family, health, and life.